If I asked you to name, like, South Africa's most valuable export, you'd probably guess gold or diamonds, maybe platinum.
Yeah, totally. That's usually the standard answer.
Right. But what if one of the nation's most untapped economic engines isn't actually buried underground? What if it's, standing on stages and working in local art centers?
It's a huge shift in perspective. I mean, we usually treat painting or theater as just, well, something nice to have, like a luxury.
A luxury that comes after the serious business of the economy is sorted out.
Exactly. But the source material we were looking at today completely flips that script.
It really does. Welcome to today's deep dive into the third draft of South Africa's 2017 revised white paper on arts, culture, and heritage. Our mission today is to explore how a nation systematically rewrites its cultural DNA to heal historical divides and turn creativity into a core economic engine. Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, it's so easy to just dismiss art as a hobby, but looking at the data they analyzed, it is actually pulling major economic weight. I mean, the creative sector contributes about 2.9% to the national GDP.
Wait, really? That's massive.
Yeah, and it creates roughly 500,000 jobs.
Which, functionally speaking, puts the creative industry right up there with the country's historically dominant mining sector.
It really does, yeah.
So, if art is essentially the new gold, how are they planning to build the infrastructure to actually mine it?
What's fascinating here is that they embed the arts directly into the National Development Plan for 2030. They aren't just, setting up a few community grants.
It's bigger than that.
Much bigger. They are treating creativity as an essential, measurable tool for poverty eradication and job creation.
So treating it with the exact same seriousness as manufacturing, basically.
Exactly.
But I mean, an economic engine that size can't run on broken colonial-era machinery. To efficiently power it, the nation needs a total structural overhaul. The historical setup in South Africa was heavily fractured, right?
Oh, absolutely. It was this Eurocentric patchwork of institutions.
Right, so to fix that, the paper outlines consolidating these bodies into a streamlined, unified National Heritage Council driven by African knowledge systems.
Yeah, that's the phrase they use.
I have to push back a little here, though. Is African knowledge systems just like a bureaucratic buzzword? Or does that mean tangible changes on the ground for a local museum or a community arts center?
I get why you'd think it's just a buzzword, but it matters because it mandates how actual money gets spent. It's not just a rebrand.
Okay, so how does it work in practice?
Well, under the old system, a local Zulu dance troupe or a community storyteller might have to apply for funding through this really strict Eurocentric process.
Like written proposals and stuff that favors classical European art forms.
Precisely. So they were essentially locked out of the treasury because they didn't fit a foreign mold.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense.
But by shifting to African knowledge systems, it mandates moving indigenous forms of theater, dance, and oral history from the marginalized periphery straight to the fully funded center stage.
Okay, so we have this newly streamlined, decolonized mining infrastructure set up.
Right.
But those institutions are completely useless without protecting the actual human beings creating the culture.
Which brings us to the workers themselves.
Yeah. In the actual mining industry, you have unions and safety regulations. How does a framework like this provide a safety net for creators who traditionally lack social security?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, you can't have a thriving creative economy if the workers live in constant financial precarity. What's groundbreaking here is the push to recognize the unique legal status of artists.
Meaning tangible economic rights, not just applause at the end of a show.
Exactly. They propose establishing a specific benevolent fund to provide emergency funeral costs, medical equipment, and short-term disaster loans.
Oh, wow. That's huge for freelance cultural workers.
It is. It completely moves away from that romanticized starving artist trope. It acknowledges that cultural workers are highly vulnerable laborers who require real protections.
It really challenges you to look at how your own society values, funds, and legally protects its creative minds. So, what does this all mean?
I think it means rewriting a nation's cultural DNA requires a total rebuild of the foundation to support the people who actually do the work.
For sure. There is one final provocative thought for you to explore on your own, though. The source briefly warns of the digital revolution's threat to artists.
Oh, right, the tech aspect.
Yeah. If a nation successfully decolonizes its physical historical heritage, how does it protect its newly empowered cultural identity from being commodified and erased by borderless global tech algorithms?
That is the big question going forward.